welcome to episode number 2 of our brand new podcast / show, which we are calling the Down South Photo Show. And I would like to say g'day to Cameron Blake down in Tasmania. G'day, Cam.
G'day, Brens. How are you going?
Very well, thank you.
We made it to episode 2.
Wow, 2 in a row. Who'd have thought?
It's not like the Carlton Football Club, but that's okay. We won't go there.
Jeez. No, I didn't think we were going to introduce any football talk into this, but there you go. You've done it now.
I think we had to. Anyway, okay. Moving on. Yeah, hello. I'm good. How are you today?
Yeah, very well, mate. Very well.
Excellent.
Like to give a shout out to everyone who listened or watched the first episode last week. We got a great response, wouldn't you say, Cam?
Yeah, I was pretty much actually blown away by it. I thought we might only get maybe a handful of listeners and probably some emails, but I thought we did really well. And thanks for everyone for tuning in. And it was good. The feedback's been great. People seem to be enjoying it so far. And I guess the pressure's on us to keep up how awesome it's going to be.
Well, I think that's why the majority of the comments that we got were great, because I think people like the relaxed nature of the show. We do like to sort of bounce off each other, and we also do like to talk a heap of crap. So
we're experts.
I'm very good at it, that's for sure. Couple of things about the show itself. If you are on YouTube and you're watching this on YouTube, please do us a little favor. There's a subscribe button down there. It is completely free to subscribe to a YouTube channel. It's not going to cost you one brass farthing. So if you can hit that subscribe button, that would be awesome, because it helps to get our show out there. It helps populate the YouTube algorithm by people subscribing. Also, there's a thumbs up button down there and the bell icon. So if you hit the bell icon, it means you'll be notified when we do pop up a new episode on the channel. And it just helps us as well to see how many people are watching, how many people are subscribing, and gives us a little bit of encouragement.
Yeah, it strokes the ego a little bit.
Well, that's what we're all about. we don't get enough of that. So
that's it.
So I wanted to just also talk a little bit about just the brilliance of the name that is the Down South Photo Show. Yeah. How did we come up with that?
Yeah, look, it was hours in the making. It literally was hours in the making. If we go,
well, we did bounce a few names around, and of course, we wanted to lean on the fact that the young man over there is down in Tasmania, and I am based in Southern Victoria in Ocean Grove. Cam in Hobart, me in Ocean Grove. So we're both down south, and of course, we are Australians, so we are always referred to as being down south. So we just thought the Down South Photo Show, why not? Got a good ring to it.
It does. I think it's got an excellent ring to it. I wonder if we got any international viewers and listeners from that last one.
Well, if you are listening to us from outside Australia, if you want to hit the little thumbs up, or if you're whatever you can do on the medium in which you're watching, hit a thumbs up, leave a comment, say g'day. It was really cool last week when we asked where people were, and hey presto, all these comments came up. I'm here and I'm there. It was really good to see.
There was a lot of lockdown Melbourne, I saw on the comments.
We did have a lot of lockdown Melbourne, which is no longer lockdown. So that's good to see. Unlocked Melbourne. And that's how, well, yeah, as I say, we came up with a name. It was pretty simple, really. And also the fact that the words photo and show have O's in them that we can turn into little aperture logos as well. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And Cam, quick shout out to your friend who did the little caricatures of us.
Yeah, Rob, who I think his at handle is Spedsy, Spedsy on Instagram. He does heaps of cartoon drawings and caricatures and things like that. And he's done a little bit of work with me on another thing I did, which we'll probably bring up at some stage in an episode. Shout out to Rob. Thank you so much. He's just one of those, he's a Melbourne guy as well. So he's a local for you, sort of.
Yep.
But he's just one of those guys where you say, hey, I need this, and there's no BS in between. It's just like, I need this, and this is what I'm looking for. And he, like, literally the logo we came up with for the show, it was one email. He goes, what do you think about this? I'm like, done.
So perfect.
Send me an invoice. So we'll chuck his handle. If anything, it's just really cool to have a look at how talented people can be when they draw and bring up things like that. So we'll put a link in the show notes to his Instagram account. It's really cool. He's got some really cool characters, and thanks to him, and I think it looks good, and I think the name works, and here we are the Down South Photo Show.
We are the Down South Photo Show. Website coming soon, I would imagine, as well at some point, but we'll get there on that. So pretty much every week we'll discuss a little bit about what's going on with Cam and myself, with what we've been doing in regards to the photography industry and the businesses in which we run. So, Cam, how was your week?
My week was pretty cool. It's gone pretty quick from that last episode, I must admit.
It has.
Yes. So what have I been up to this week? I actually did a photo shoot of a young lady out at the historic township of Richmond, which is
fantastic.
If people don't know where Richmond is, it's about 20 minutes out of Hobart. Beautiful old town. It's got the Australia's oldest bridge. It's got an old jail there and all those kind of things. So really back in the late 1800s type of style, sandstone buildings and everything's heritage listed out there. But so I went out there with Grace, who's a young lady, does a bit of acting and modeling down here. We actually did a photo shoot together. I was commissioned to do a photo shoot for a boot company. Talk about going off landscape and doing weird stuff. A boot company called, I think they're called Kadar Boots. They're based in the middle of nowhere at the arse end of nowhere in WA.
Right.
Another photographer friend, Paul, over in WA, put the owner onto me, and they wanted to get a photo of these cowboy boots, a picture of your cowboy boots, and they actually glow in the dark. They've got all this glow-in-the-dark blue stitching all through the boots, and they are really cool. Like, I thought to myself, glow-in-the-dark boots sounds a bit sort of corny, but she sent these out, and I needed a model, and Grace was nice enough to put her hand up. But this owner of the business wanted these glow-in-the-dark boots with bioluminance, that's the glow-in-the-dark water stuff that goes in the water,
yes,
and an ended aurora in the background of this shot.
Sure, easy.
Yeah.
Consider it done.
No problem. So that was pretty much the conversation I had with her. I'm like, look, I love the idea. Like, the concept is brilliant. The boots look great. But the idea of lining all that up is going to be really unique. But we got around it. We ended up doing a beautiful sort of sun just after sunset down at a coastal shop. And we actually got some bioluminates in the water as well.
No, so, you did not.
Yeah, there is. There's and it was actually it was actually really, really talking about sort of getting commissioned for work and timeframes. There was no real time frame from the owner. She said, look, we're releasing these boots sort of early this year. And so I had a few months to do it. I'm like, oh, piece of cake. I'll have months to do this. And we went through a stage of having all these bioluminates around Hobart and around southern Tasmania every week, every week for months. And then nothing. Yep. As soon as I got the boots, nothing. All the tides went differently, or the weather went differently. So we got there in the end, and it's a stunning shot. We'll put it up somewhere so people can see it.
So I'm going to overlay it like magic right now over as we're speaking. There it is. See? Look, just like that. And for those of you listening on the podcast, well, you're going to have to click the link below to see it.
Yeah, exactly. And don't be afraid to go buy the boots, because this lady actually exports out to the US, into places like Texas and stuff like that. She's massively big in the US. But anyway, back to Grace. She needed to do a bit more of an updated portfolio. So we went out there and did a few shots. Spent about an hour and a half wandering around. Just a really cool chick, real relaxed, easy to work with, a little bit quirky like us, like just a bit of a sense of humor and
something you enjoy doing.
Yeah, I don't mind doing some model shots. Especially if the model's really relaxed. Like sometimes models can be really uptight or really nervous, or you know, maybe new to the game, and that makes your job a bit harder, because you've got to try and relax them and make them, you know, relax a bit more and make them a bit laugh a bit more and get a bit more at ease. But yeah, I don't mind doing it. I've done a few model shoots over the years, and it's good fun. And if you can get, I'm a big believer in natural lighting, doing portraits. Yep. I'm not a big studio portrait person.
Yep.
So we had a really good time. So I handed over about 30 or 40 images of her today. She's happy with them. She's posting them all over her social media.
Fantastic.
So, and then we're probably going to do another shoot. She wants to do another shoot with sort of dresses and indoor black and white type of stuff. So if you can picture Audrey Hepburn, black and white, sort of cool hairdo, really cool dress, this girl looks very similar to her.
Oh, fantastic.
So it makes my job real easy.
A little bit of inspiration. So inspiration came easily. Like, you just, you had a brief as well, I suppose, which always helps. It wasn't just, hey, go and take us some photos.
No. I mean,
I know from my personal experience on a few times where I've shot commercially as well, I love it when they say, this is what we need.
Yeah.
But you've also got that creative license either side of that to work in, you know, what you want to present or how you think the product should be presented. Yeah, so,
and I must admit, that's something I do like about commercial work in a way, especially that boot job. Like the owner is like, look, I don't know anything about photography. I don't know anything about bioluminance. I don't need, oh, am I there? I've lost a screen.
Oh, goodness me.
We'll just keep going then. Oh. Yeah. She said, look, I don't know anything about photography. I don't know anything about bioluminance. And she said, but I know my boots and I know they're going to look good doing this and that. So can you do this? So that was good. And with Grace the other day, she sent me just a few screenshots of images that she liked the look of. And away we went. So it was pretty good. It was easy done, really.
Yeah, nice one. Do you need a minute to get your background back up?
I'm going
to
get my background back up. I got signed out of something.
Okay, yeah. By the magic of, look at that, see, it's back.
Back.
So you now have a back. Now, which is actually quite good. I'm glad that actually happened because I want to ask you where your background photo was taken.
You see, that's why I did it. I signed myself out of my account just to do a segue.
Well, you did well.
Model shoots into.
You did well.
Yeah, thanks. So my background, this is one of my favourite places here in Tassie at the moment. I'm really addicted to this location. So this is up in the northwest coast of Tasmania. Mm-hmm. So this is the Tarkine region. So this is up near, this is actually Sarah Ann Rocks. It's a location along the western coast. It's just wild, rugged, battered, crazy sort of coastline.
And relatively untouched, I would imagine.
Yeah, look, there's little shacks all sort of spotted around the background and on the back of the dunes and things like that. And there is a couple of towns up and down from here, but they're not huge towns. It's mostly untouched. It's a very controversial area as well. There's lots of logging and mining and happening in the Tarkine. So the Tarkine, you've got like a coastline, then you've got like a bit of space in between, then you go into the giant sort of cool temperate forests. So there's always something going on up there with protests and controversial things going on, but the Tarkine is beautiful. It's a really amazing coastline, and I'm not a huge coastal photographer. I'm more of a mountains and landscape rivers kind of guy. Where I know you are, you're mostly do a lot of coastal stuff because clearly you live down there. But it's good to get out there, and it's just a bit different to that normal sort of coastal shot you get.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Well, as you can see, I'm still rocking the same background as last week because I had a granddad moment and couldn't work out. Well, yeah, I couldn't work out how to change it in time for us to start the recording. And I'm also coming to you in 4x3.
Yeah, you are. 4x3 rocks.
Like all the cool kids do.
It's so 2008.
Well, I mean, I could even say that, the hipsters like the film and stuff, but film's 3.2, so.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I'm 4.3. I'm Mr. Olympus.
Yeah, you're really hanging. You're sort of micro.
I'm micro 4/3.
Yeah, you are.
Right.
See, that's pretty much what I've been going on with this week. Oh, there was the Dark Mofo Festival's just finished down here as well.
Now, bring this on. This looks fantastic. So you've sent me some photos, which I will also endeavour to overlay through YouTube viewers.
Probably,
and again, there'll be a link below.
I am looking
at them right now. And you've shown me three photos, which look fantastic. The one that I like the most out of the three there is the second one, which will be in the middle of the screen now you guys watching.
Yeah.
That's got this... Last Jedi look about it, mate.
It does, yeah. So for those that don't know, Dark Mofo, everyone's probably heard of the Mona Gallery, the Museum of New Art, whatever it is down here. Huge gallery just out of Hobart, gets tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of visitors in a normal year, not in COVID times. But each year they put on a Dark Mofo, which is like a huge winter. It's almost like a winter type of festival. And it is crazy, like the whole town around Hobart just gets turned into this incredible night sort of festival, and there's all these light displays on and there's all these weird wacky things going on. So I went out the other night for a bit of a walk around, and the thing is, what I like about it, it's at night time, but you can just sort of blend in. Like usually if you walk around Hobart, there's always someone taking photos of Mount Wellington or something like that, but here you literally just mold into the darkness. So no one knows you're there. You're just walking around. So that shot you're talking about that we're looking at now, you can get those shots because people don't know you're taking them because it's pitch black in there and it's just got this red light coming on. So
No, they're fantastic. It's really cool. It looks like a great event to photograph, and I would imagine would come with its own challenges as well, being incredibly low light photography, which, of course, when you put yourself out to take these photos, it all helps, doesn't it? With, you know, you get, I bet you learned something while you were taking those photos.
Yeah, and you do. And like I shot these on my Olympus, it's at the EM1 Mark III. And nice. It's a 25-1.2. So straight away before I went out there, I thought I need a really fast lens. So when we're talking fast lenses, we're talking wide apertures and letting heaps of light in. So 1.2 was perfect because you can hand hold these ISO sort of 400, hand hold them, walk around. There's no tripod needed. You can really just, you know, sort of get all the shots you want handheld without setting up. And, you know, you can capture all those moments, which is like a couple of those shots there where there's just people there. But Yeah, it was good fun. And I learned that I was actually underexposing here by like three stops.
Yeah.
Because these red lights that are all sort of prominent around, it's called Paint the Town Red, and all the buildings go red, everything's red, and it just overpowers the shot sometimes. So I heavily underexpose just to silhouette everything apart from that red. So yeah, it's good fun though. We'll have to come down one day. But anyone coming down, if you're going to come down to Hobart, if they do it again next year, which hopefully they will, you need to book months in advance. Like Hobart is booked out for a month of this whole festival. So,
Is it any coincidence that it coincides with the winter solstice, or is that?
That's not a coincidence. It is just purely based around that. So
right, okay. I thought there might have been some kind of connection.
Yeah, so they do a winter solstice swim. So one of the beaches down here, they get thousands of people nude up and just go for a swim at dawn. So it's if I remember rightly what I remember what they wrote, it was 3 degrees down here. The air temperature was 2 or 3 degrees when they did it.
Wow.
And the water temperature was 12 or 13 degrees.
Yeah.
So
that would have been lovely.
It would have been lovely. It would have been what they call spanner water.
Okay.
Google that one.
Okay. Is it, look in the urban dictionary for that one.
Yeah. So what about your week? What have you been doing? What's happened in the last week with you?
Well, we've been lucky enough that people in Melbourne were allowed to travel down our way. So Friday night saw traffic jams heading down to Geelong and down to the surf coast. So and the Bellarine Peninsula where I am. A lot of people around on Friday and Saturday, so both my shops were nice and busy, which was great. Yeah, selling a bit of landscape photography of my own, but a lot of people printing their photos and that sort of stuff too.
Yeah,
so
that
was good. Feels good to be back in business again. It's been tough, but you know we'll get there with that. But it's just nice to see things starting to return back to normal. Still masking up in the shop, of course.
Yeah.
Got the QR code check-in going 24/7, of course.
Yeah. How good are QR codes? If that's one thing COVID's brought out, is QR codes.
Well, the funny thing is, Cam, in my shop, I've been using QR codes for, almost since I opened to get people. You can point your camera at a QR code and it'll connect to my Wi-Fi. Then you point your camera at the QR code that's on the photo printing kiosk.
Yeah.
And that connects your phone to the kiosk. So, I was trying to teach people how to use these QR codes. Or now, it's just so if there was something good came from this from the pandemic, it was that minuscule little bit of trivia that people can now use QR codes in my shop.
One thing I wanted
to mention was today we had some southern right whales off the coast, right out here in basically that photo you see behind me, basically right there.
Some
southern right whales off Ocean Grove and 13th Beach, which is just around the peninsula there.
Are they heading south? Are they heading down my way? Or are they heading away from me? I don't know.
Sorry,
I know there is a migrating season clearly, and I don't know. We get them off the east coast down here out of Wineglass Bay and Fraser National Park, and then we get them also around the bottom near Bruny Island.
Yes. Now, do you get southern rights or humpbacks or both?
I don't know. So we're getting into marine biology that clearly we both aren't qualified.
My understanding is that humpbacks make their way north from Antarctic waters via the Tassie coast.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
And end up in Queensland at places like Hervey Bay.
Yeah.
And they go up to Hervey Bay where it's safe for them to calve.
Yeah. Okay.
And then they hook it all the way back down to Antarctica again. Yeah. So, and they calve in August, September, October. Right. So it'd be probably around this time of year where they're starting to
head up north part of the world as well. You know a lot about
it. I know a little bit. I went on a whale watching cruise a couple of years ago, took the kids out on a whale watching cruise out of Harvey Bay, and took the camera with, got a couple of nice photos as well.
I've done a couple of little boat tours off the bottom of Tassie here. There's a really cool operator down here, and I've seen every marine animal you can think of, dolphins, seals, penguins, walruses, whatever the hell they are, whatever's down here, never seen a whale.
Really?
it does my head. And every, like, 2 days later, you'll see all these photos flash up on social media. Yeah. Oh, huge whale breaching. I'm like, really? So,
yeah, there was a few, there was a few photos chucked up on local social media here.
Yeah, cool.
That's why I know about it. But unfortunately, I was tied up at the shop and couldn't get the camera and rush down to the beach to get any photos. But hey, next time we'll do that.
It is a good thing. I think one thing on that is it's good to see. It just means the water's healthy and, you know, they're safe and they're migrating. That's one thing I think it's great is that, you know, they're still migrating around and giving birth to more whales. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's very, very cool to see. And
you're lucky.
We are lucky. We live in a great part of the world where that kind of stuff comes to us.
Yeah,
pretty cool. All right, so moving on a little bit. That's what's been happening with our week. Now, Cam's about to make me and probably some of you very jealous as well, because Cameron is about to hit the road and he's off to the Flinders Rangers camp.
I am about to hit the road. I take off very, very soon. I'm hoping that everything stays open and no lockdowns, and I've got to go on the boat and then drive through Victoria. I'm not allowed to stop in Victoria if I want to go into South Australia without having to quarantine. So it's definitely a new spin on traveling around and doing, you know, scouting for photographic workshops and things like that. It's just another element of things to take note of. I'm heading off up to the Flinders Ranges. I'm planning to spend about a week up that way, or maybe a week and a half. So my idea is I'm going to put on a Flinders Ranges workshop sometime in 2022, probably similar sort of time frame, around about sort of June, July. I'm not a big fan of people that run workshops but don't scout beforehand. I think that's just too much pressure on someone to go up there and try and BS your way around a location you've never been to.
There's not a lot of value in that for your clients either.
No, that's right. So I'm going to go up there and spend a good week around there. It's almost like I run a workshop on my own, and this is the location. This is good for sunrise. This is good for sunset. This is great for astro. The Milky Way comes up this way. All those kind of things. So yeah, I'll be heading up that way tomorrow. But it sort of got me thinking about not just, you know, if you're running a business, but just in general, if you're going out to take photos and landscape photography, scouting and scouting your location beforehand is so important. I think it's something that can really help improve your photography quicker as well, is that if you have a plan where you're going and not just rock up and try and, you know, do it on the fly, like this podcast and YouTube channel that we do. But, you know, if you sort of have a location, you know, for example, Flinders Ranges, like the last couple of weeks, I've just been researching other photographers, researching on social media, researching what roads are open, researching, you know, using the good old Photo Pills app. I don't know if anyone's got the Photo Pills app.
Oh, funny you should mention it, because I was just about to say,
mention
Photo Pills. If you've, by the way, this show is not sponsored at all. So anything, any branding that we talk about, other than the businesses that we run, any branding we talk about, we're just throwing them in because we like that stuff.
Yeah, and it works.
So if we talk about it, we recommend it. Photo Pills is an app that you can get on your smartphone.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Do you use all the features of it? Because it's got a hell of a lot of features.
I've used a lot of them. I wouldn't use all of them.
Yeah.
One of the main ones I use is the augmented reality with the stars.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows you.
Stars.
Correct. And yeah. But more importantly, it shows me precisely where the sun's going to rise.
Yeah.
And because I love shooting sunrises and sunsets for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly down south where we are at this time of year, the sun sets so much further away in the on the horizon.
That's ridiculous.
We get a massive variance because we're so far away from the equator. Again, just to use that photo behind me as an example, where that sun is setting, oh, my finger is speed, where that sun is setting now, that photo was taken in summer. Well, now in, and oddly enough, today when we're recording this is the winter solstice, so we're smack bang in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
That sun is nowhere near in the frame of this shot. It's way over that way, a lot further.
Yeah.
And you get used to it in your own area, but when you go to somewhere new, like the Flinders Ranges, or I was out at Mungo National Park a month ago, I had no idea. Where's the sun going to set? Where's it going to rise? And when you're only there for a few days, having an app like PhotoPills is really useful because it gets you on the front foot straight away.
Yeah, I agree. And same with down here, we get a massive variance in sunrise, sunsets. You know, summer we're light by 4:30, dark by 10 o'clock in the evening. Yeah. But winter it's almost 10 to 8, you know, back to quarter to 5 type of thing. So it's, yeah, so going up to a place, and I've never been to the Flinders Ranges before. They've been on my list for a long time to see. But, yeah, it got me thinking that, you know, you've really got to scout your locations. And it's not a matter of scouting or looking at other people's work to sort of go, okay, I'm just going to go get those shots. I don't work that way. I think to myself, well, that's a beautiful shot that, you know, X, Y, or Z's done. Beautiful shot that Brendan's done of Mungo National Park or whatever it might be. But I also use that as a bit of inspiration to think to myself, well, you know what, I'm actually going to go and try and get something completely different to that or get something a little bit more unique. And so, yeah, the last 2 weeks I've pretty much been invested heavily in the Flinders Ranges. Don't ask me where I'm going because I still don't know. But I've got a Google map. I've marked all the places I want to go on my Google Maps. And so, yeah, I head up there, heading out tomorrow, catch the Spirit of Spew across the Bass Strait. I'll give you a wave as I come past. Although it's going to be nice and smooth, apparently. So,
you're literally going to be 25 kilometres from me tomorrow.
I'm literally going to pass you and give you a wave, it'll be probably mid-morning the next day, I reckon, because we come overnight. So it's a nice
Okay, right. No, well, don't wake me up.
No, I won't. No. But, yeah, so I think it's a really important for guys.
Does that get you into Melbourne sunrise-ish?
Yeah, it gets us
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can take a photo literally off the back of the boat if I'm up that early. But yeah, it sort of got me. I thought, you know, for people that are listening and people that are watching, obviously, and, you know, obviously most people are going to have an interest in landscape photography because that's mostly what this program is going to be about. Yep. But if you really want to improve your photography, save yourself the time of asking around when you get to a location. Have a plan. It doesn't have to be minute by minute, but have a map of locations you want to go check out. And make sure you get there at the right time of day. And I think it just sort of takes like 50% of the hard work out if you get there and you know where you're going and what you're doing. So a little bit of a tip just to do a bit of research. Don't be lazy. Of course, you'll go to places where sometimes it just goes off light-wise and doesn't matter where you are, you'll get a good shot. But, this is the Flinders Ranges workshop scouting event, I guess you could call it. So
fantastic. And, I mean, also when you go out to these locations, I know, speaking for myself again, shooting the golden hour, sunrise, sunset, that sort of stuff. What I always say to people is give yourself more time than you think. So quite often I've been going to shoot a sunrise and then all of a sudden you realise, actually, no, it's 20 minutes further to drive there than I thought.
Yeah.
And then you get there and it's half over. And sometimes the best light actually happens up to an hour before the sun rises and definitely up to an hour after the sun sets, depending on the time of year. But giving yourself maximum time, and that's where the scouting and your preparation comes into it. And like Cam said, don't spend hours on it, meticulously down to the minute, but give yourself a bit of flexibility. Also, you're going to need time to scout perhaps foreground subjects that you might want to put into your landscape shots as well.
Yeah.
I've seen there's a few like old farm buildings and stuff out
there. Yeah, there's some old sort of ruins and there's old windmills.
Fantastic. They make the best subjects.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting because Tassie doesn't have, like, we've got beautiful historic towns down here, but we've got a few ruins lying around, but we don't have those sort of classic outback sort of ruins things.
So a few ruins lying around.
Yeah,
no, we're just laying around.
Like, we've got, you know, beautiful Port Arthur and all those places. But you're right as well. Like, just touching on that quickly, I think a lot of people sometimes get a little bit confused when you're doing a workshop or something like that or going out with mates. You're like, oh, let's go do sunrise. And people think you get there at sunrise. Or, hey, let's go shoot sunset, you know, down the beach there. Oh, we'll get there at sunset. No, you've got to be there. And I think down here it's a noticeable change. You're right. It's almost like the hour, it's a countdown from an hour before sunrise or sunset or after.
Yeah.
And the light just flicks and it just starts getting nicer and nicer and nicer. So
it's amazing. And I've shot a lot of sunsets and who hasn't really, who's into their landscape photography, but almost every time I still get that little surprise of, the light has arrived.
Yeah, it does. It's so noticeable, isn't it?
And I
don't know how many times I've been driving a car and I've thought the same thing. I'm like, yep, crap. I'm meant to be there. 40 minutes away, and the lights go on. And I stop the car and try and get something there and then. But
Have you ever fallen for the old trick of leaving too early?
Well, that's the
problem, from a sunset.
Oh, going home. Yeah, going home early. Yes. Yes. We are many times in workshops. We people are like, oh, okay, so that's it. I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
We wait till it's dark.
That's right.
Because you'll get that, and it's something I don't think people realize, especially with, you know, if you look at the real world class photographers, landscape photographers, and you go, how the hell did they get that shot? That shot, and we spoke about it last week quickly. It's fleeting moments. It might be a 2 minute moment, mm-hmm. and if you're not there and you're not ready, you're not set up, then you're gonna miss it. So.
That's right, and it's more than just the act of taking the photo. It's actually getting to experience it as well, and being there. It does something for you. It's awesome getting out there, and I can only reference back to the last sunset shots I did, which was at Mungo.
Yeah,
and I was there with my brother-in-law, and we stumbled on a really great little spot for photos, and I'm looking at the PhotoPills app and I'm like, well, the sun's going to set right there, which happened to be exactly right behind this row of trees on the horizon, and then the light came and it's like, we scouted, we found the spot, we got set up, and it came to us, and we weren't rushing around. We, you know,
and I find with that as well, and of course we'll put some of your images up so people can see what you're referring to, but I find it straight away, but it, like, I feel like the photos I take when I've planned, and, you know, admittedly, you get lucky with the light. It could go good or bad. It just depends on the weather. But I find that when I come back and have a look at those on my editing suite, and I look at it, like, I don't edit them as much because the light's perfect as it is. And you walk away with a sense of, like, it's a complete package. Okay, I did the hard work, got there at the right time, had the right settings, got a nice photo. And to me, that's more rewarding sometimes and just getting that lucky one out of the bag where you just happen to be the right place at the right time.
But 100%. And that also speaks to what we mentioned very briefly last week, was getting to know your camera is vital. You know, knowing that this is how I change the aperture, this is how I change the ISO, this is how I, you know, knowing where all that is.
Yeah.
Because we can sit here and tell you that, but everyone out there's probably got a different camera model.
Yeah.
But knowing, so even getting your camera out every second day and walking into your backyard, you have to go somewhere. It'd be nice if you could, but you don't have to. And you can take a photo of, you know, your garden, but no, you know, and do it in bright sunny conditions, do it in low light.
Yeah.
That basic little bit of practice makes perfect will go a long way towards when you are out shooting photos and you get your sunset moment, or you get your, you know, when the light comes.
Yeah.
I love it.
I do a classic one on my workshops when I have people, you know, we've all lined up, you know, for example, behind us, you know, we're all lining up and waiting for the light. And, you know, it's like I said, getting to know your camera and understanding how it is. But people will take a photo and like, oh, I'll wait a bit longer. I'm like, yeah, don't waste too much film. And it's almost like I almost try and teach people to shoot like it is shooting on film. Like, don't just spray 1,000 shots at sunset. Just wait for those moments and press the shutter. And like I said, in between, sit back and watch it, because it's enjoyable watching the world go that way. So
So moving on a little bit, great discussion point, by the way. I love talking about, particularly when you're going out to look for locations and stuff and new places. I mean, because it drives you, right? I mean,
well, I'm sort of feel like I'm a little kid in a candy store at the moment. Like, I've got to get up here because I know how good this region is.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, well, what can I take away from this place? Like, I've done Tassie to death, and, you know, my photos get pretty well known for around here, but like, I've never been to this place before. So it's almost like an overseas trip. I've never been there. So
yeah, for sure. For sure. And a fresh challenge. So it's great. Mm. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Which sort of segues a little bit, I suppose, into another sort of discussion point we wanted to do tonight, is just talking about our favorite landscape photographers. Now, I might start if that's all right.
I was going to say, you go first on this one, because.
No, that's right. I follow a lot of landscape photographers on socials and all that sort of stuff. And I've enjoyed watching, I enjoy it when these photographers that I follow put out new stuff, because it's always class. But there's one in particular that I've been following for ever since I bought my first edition of Better Photography magazine, and that's Peter Eastway. I think Peter's work is phenomenal. So I'll put a little link down below so you can check out some of Peter's work.
Yeah.
Met Peter once at a photo trade show in Melbourne. Don't know him from a bar of soap, but I just wanted to walk up and say, hey, love your work. I think your photography is fantastic, and just shook his hand and said hi.
Yeah.
Check him out. One of the, I think he was the founder and definitely the editor of Better Photography magazine.
Yeah.
Shoots a lot of large format digital.
Yeah.
And what he does very, very well, in my opinion, is editing. His editing is stunning. He's got a real world feel about his photos. His composition's nuts, and I've been a big fan of Pete's for a long, long time. So go and check him out. And Cam, you got someone
speaking of Peter, he's almost regarded now as the grandfather of landscape. He'll probably shoot me if he ever sees me calling him the grandfather, but he's almost like the grandfather of landscape photography in Australia. His work is it's pretty specky. And I've met him a couple of times through the AIPP things that have been there. But touching on that as well with his editing, I actually watched, I think he had a series of photoshopping type of landscape instruction things that you're able to download. And I watched a few of them, and I think I got a lot off him in regards to just seeing the light. There's something that clicked that he said in one of those little sessions that he did. It's like, exposing for that light and seeing that light and looking for it. And I think that was a bit of a turning point for me a few years ago now, when I saw that. I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it now. That was like the light bulb moment, like, oh,
yeah,
okay, I get it. So he's incredible. And he's actually recently just in Bruny Island down here. I just saw a thing actually today of he was down here with a few other guys flying helicopters around Bruny Island.
Amazing. And I suppose that's the other thing I like about the guy. He gets out there a lot. A very, very nice guy to boot. So
yeah, he is. Absolutely. Yeah.
I've
never heard a bad word, and his work speaks for itself, really. So
What about, I mean, Peter aside, you obviously like Pete's work as well.
Yeah, I like Pete's work. I'm a little bit different in regards to following people, and I don't know, maybe it's me being lazy. I don't think it's to do with not respecting the industry I'm in or whatever. I sort of found a few years ago that I was following quite a lot of people, but I found that really heavily influenced how I go and shoot things. And I found that the easy way for me was just to really try and find my own style and find my own way of doing things. So I sort of made a conscious decision a few years ago just to, I still look and still enjoy and really admire heaps of people. But I don't go out actively trying to find new work to follow and things like that. So call me stuck up. I don't know. Maybe it's whatever it is. I just don't sort of base it that much. But for me, my favorite landscape photographer, there's probably one or two, but I'll go with the Tasmanian legend, Peter Dombroskis. For those who don't know who Peter is, he was a large format film photographer going back into sort of 70s, 80s and 90s. He had a huge deal to do with the damming of the Franklin River and saving that Franklin River from being dammed, which is down here in the west coast of Tassie.
Now, if I'm allowed to, copyright permitting, I will throw up that famous photo that a lot of people attribute to the saving of Franklin, at least bringing it to the fore in people's minds.
Yeah, so that image is called Rock Island Bend, and this is the thing I love about Peter's work. He's actually work, speaks for itself. His composition is incredible. But what really inspired me to like him was the fact that he's shooting large format film. And a lot of these shots that, we'll put a link to his work, you can go check it out for yourself if you don't know. But a lot of these work is, it's 4 or 5 days walking, or the Rock Island Bend one. I've done the Franklin River 5 times now, I think it is. And that's 6 days down the river. So that's 6 days of rafting to get a shot. It's obviously not the only shot he took on the whole trip, but that shot to become so iconic. And it's regarded as one of the most successful political images of all time. The sway it had, like that was what Bob Hawke pretty much got in power on the back of. So yeah, Peter's work, he's got a beautiful composition. The sharpness all through his images is incredible. His foreground subjects are amazing. Sadly, he passed away. He actually passed away out while doing photographs up on the Western Arthurs.
Yeah, quite a tragic story, but definitely well worth a read if you can find that story.
Well, what I'll do, we'll put it in the show notes, is an amazing documentary called Wildness. which is a documentary on Peter Dombroskis and Allegis Tricanus, who was almost like his mentor, father figure when he moved down here to Tassie. It's an incredible documentary, but yeah, Peter's work's incredible. He's the only Australian photographer inducted into the World Hall of Fame of Photographers. So he is the legend. His work still stands above everyone else's. And if I can shoot 10% as good as Peter, then my work is, I'm pretty happy with that. But yeah, definitely go check out Peter and well, they're both Peters. There you go. Peter Eastway, Peter Dombroskis.
Amazing. And fantastic that, that he shot exclusively film because he passed away, I think, before digital even took off. Was that right?
It was 1996, 97 when he passed away.
So he was shooting film his whole career.
Yeah, and he was shooting I've actually got, and we might bring it up one day, but I've actually got the same camera he used. I've got a 5x4 Lindhoff Technica Master Classic. And I still shoot a bit of 5-inch by 4-inch film. And just to, I was away last weekend with a few friends up in the Tarkine in the background here, and I took that camera and took some, took about 6 sheets of film, probably screwed 3 of them up, didn't do the right thing. But a few people watching me set up, they're like, oh my God, is this what he used? I'm like, this is practically the same system. And they're like, okay, so what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm telling them, this is what I'm looking at, the composition, all this kind of stuff. 20 minutes later, they're like, oh, so when do you take the shot? I'm like, well, once we've done everything, once we've done all the movements, once we've got the exposure right, maybe just wait for that sun to go down a bit more. They're like, oh, wow. And I actually, quick little story on the side, I actually bought some old slide film off a lady down here in Hobart off Gumtree. And I went around to the, she said, I'll come around. Sadly, her late husband was a photographer and she had a freezer full of this beautiful Belvia film. So I went around and bought the whole fridge of it because that's what you do. And I went around there and she said, well, maybe you'd be interested in this camera my husband had as well. And it was a boxed, brand new Nikon FM2 film camera, almost unused. And anyway, she went on to tell me this story that her husband knew Peter Dombroskis and they went out shooting one weekend. And the husband came back after the weekend and put his camera down and steamed into us, walked off in a huff and wasn't happy. And she said, what's going on? He goes, I'm never going out with Peter again. I'm never going shooting with him again. She's like, what are you talking about? He goes, he set his camera up on this river scene. He sat there for 8 hours and took one shot. She goes, I wanted to keep moving. I wanted to keep walking around. I wanted to go there. Well, he stayed out. Peter stayed out for another 2 days. This guy came home early. So yeah, he was really meticulous in what he did and patient. And yeah, his work's incredible. So definitely check his work out. But both Peter Eastway and Peter Dombroskis are, and Peter Eastway actually did a tribute to Peter Dombroskis. He walked into the Western Arthurs a couple of years ago. And there's another little show note we can put in there you can do a link to. Sure. Where he walked into a spot that Peter went to many times.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's great. And great that without any prompting, both of us happened to mention Australian photographers. But there you go. Influenced, obviously, by these people. So
yeah.
We're definitely going to run over time on this, but that's fine. I think we will go to our running segment, which is the Dear Cam.
We really need music, don't we, for this one? We're going to work on that. I reckon.
Oh, it's coming.
Sometime soon we're going to get some really production. Cool. Our production team's been working busy last week.
But very.
Or
very
one busy. Of them.
Yeah, this guy.
This guy.
All right, so we have a Dear Cam. Now, if you would like to ask Cam a question about preferably landscape photography, but look, it can be anything really. Does it have to be photographic related, Cam?
Love, life, and the pursuit of happiness. Let's maybe not get that deep. But yeah, all right. Look, I think landscape photography would be great. I think any photography question could probably work. I think between the two of us, if I get stuck, you might be able to help. But yeah,
we'll see how we go.
Who we got this week?
We've got Jim from Gisborne.
Jim from Gisborne. Gisborne, good golf course.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your question. Gisborne, about an hour north of Melbourne.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Victoria.
It's
beautiful. Nice part of the world.
They get really nice autumn colours up there. Is there avenues? There is avenues up there, like a bowl of trees.
That's right. So the Avenue of Honour areas up around Gisborne, which honour the fallen Anzacs. That's it's very cool, actually, and they normally use deciduous trees that go through all the color changes. Yeah, anyway, exactly. We digress. Dear Cam, are you ready?
I'm trying.
Dear Cam, I've just taken up landscape photography. Do I need to purchase Photoshop to edit my photos?
That old chestnut. So I would say no. If we're being specific about Photoshop, I would say no. I actually don't use Photoshop at all, apart from 1% of something that I do when I'm getting my photos ready for print. Mm-hmm. So I would say you don't need to purchase Photoshop. But what you probably do need is something like Lightroom, which is Adobe Lightroom. And if you look at the Adobe Creative Suite, Adobe actually package Lightroom, Photoshop, and Premiere Video, I think, together. There's a package, and I think it's like $20 or $30 a month. So mm-hmm. times have changed a bit. I remember when I first started getting into Photoshop, you'd buy Photoshop for $700, and then you'd have to update it 6 months later for another $700. But it's all subscription now, and it's all sort of online. And so I wouldn't say you need to Photoshop your images, but definitely you need some editing suite. So that could be Lightroom, Capture One. I think Aperture is one that people use as well.
Yep.
But I think it does help. I get a few people in my workshops who are religiously against editing at all. They just want pure out of camera, JPEGs, no editing, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to shoot landscape photography in RAW, the RAW file has a hell of a lot of information in that you can tweak and fix to make, you know, the shot look how you want it to look. So
yeah.
I would say
I have to chuckle a little bit when people say, no, I don't want to use Photoshop, I just want to use the JPEG that comes out of the camera,
which
has been through an image processor inside the camera. So I'm totally with you, Cam. I think you don't need Photoshop in itself, but some kind of photo editing suite or software is useful. One really cool one that I use a fair bit now is Snapseed. So you can actually import your photos from your digital camera. And Jim, if you've just taken up landscape photography and you've got yourself a pretty recent camera, you'll be able to Wi-Fi your photos now straight to your phone and use something like Snapseed, which, although I wouldn't recommend you use that if you're looking at getting your photos printed, I would definitely use it if you're just looking to get into how software can affect your image.
Yeah. I think also, I touched on it really briefly last time, is that it's that process of shooting, editing, and printing. So a lot of people think, well, I take a photo, that's it, it's done. Well, you know, you go back 30, 40 years, well, that wasn't done. You had to go and get it developed, which is now your editing. Then you have to go get it printed, which is your printing. So I think, you know, if you've taken up, you know, the fact that he said he's taken up landscape photography would indicate that he's got a passion for it, that Jim's probably wanted to get a bit further into it. So if that's the case, then the editing is almost like step two of the process. So, you know, practice, like we've said, practice religiously shooting and getting understanding your camera and your settings, but then also practicing your editing and starting to get a style and, you know, look at what works for your images. You know, you might find that you like a bit more saturation or a little bit less contrast, whatever it might be. So I'd say it's definitely a tool in the kit of photography is an editing suite. And then I guess it comes back to budget. You know, what can you afford to pay? Some people can't afford $30 a month for a program they're going to use once. Snapseed sounds good. They're, like I said, there's all other ones you can get.
Yeah, there's heaps of them.
Yeah. But I found over the last few years, Adobe Lightroom has almost as much power as Photoshop and as much ability to do stuff to photos. And it's fairly easy to use. So I'd say yes, but have a look around, see what options you've got in regards to suites.
And also don't forget that when you buy a new camera, or if you get a secondhand camera, that they don't sort of supply a disc as much these days. They used to have a CD-ROM that would have your RAW editor on that CD-ROM and would come with a fairly decent picture editing package. I think if you buy a new camera these days, it's a download, so you'll go via, when you register your camera with the manufacturer, you can download the software to convert RAW files into JPEGs, and that will come with some pretty cool editing software for you to dabble in without spending a cent.
It's come a long way from what used to have. Like you said, you usually get something or a free download or a sample or a trial version or something, which will do the job for you. Good luck with it, Jim. Hopefully,
nice one, Jim.
Yeah, and don't forget more questions. I don't mind questions. Those kind of questions.
If you have a question for Cam, please comment below, send us an email, whatever you want to do, and we will endeavour to answer your question. Well, Cam will endeavour to answer your question next week.
Do I get to phone a friend if I don't know the answer?
So you're going to be on the road next week, Cam.
I'm going to be on the road next week, but I'm thinking technology. This is one thing I did look at on my scouting, is what the 4G phone reception was like around Flinders Ranges. I'm thinking maybe if all goes well, maybe we can do a, we can do the next show and I'll be on the road up there with Flinders Rangers in the background, maybe.
If you're not sitting in a tent or on in the in your four-wheel drive, I'll be very disappointed.
On the roof, maybe. Nah.
You might have to be.
I could sit in the back of the ute with an Esky and just do a show.
Well, it might be audio only. We might have to literally phone it in.
Maybe. We'll see how we go. I'm sure we can make it work.
For sure.
So next up, you're going to do a bit of gear talk.
Yeah, so this is a regular segment I'd like to include in the podcast or in the show, is a brief little chat about the latest gear that's out there. And, well, not necessarily even the latest gear, but just gear chat in general. This week I thought I'd now, this is not sponsored. No one has said, please talk about this.
We have no sponsors.
We're one episode in, folks, I don't expect that, you know, no one's come knocking just yet, but hey.
I didn't know I had to beat them away from down here. There's people knocking on the door trying to give me sponsorship.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, sure.
If KFC's a sponsor.
That'd be all right.
That'd be all right, yeah.
Anyway, this week I would like to talk about a new release from Tamron. Now, Tamron are what we call a third-party lens manufacturer. So Tamron don't make cameras themselves. What they do is make fantastic lenses. So they make very good glass for cameras. And they have recently released the 11-20 f2.8 for Sony APS-C cameras. Now, that's a mouthful. What's it all mean? Basically, an 11-22 millimeter lens is an ultra wide angle lens. So the way the millimeters work on your lenses is the lower the number, the wider the angle. And of course, this is 11 millimeters to 20. So it's got a little bit of zoom. This is what I'd call a wide angle zoom, 11 to 20. Its lowest aperture number is f2.8, which is pretty bright.
Yeah.
So just quickly, the lower the aperture number, the brighter the lens is, so the more light it can let in. And f2.8
is already, this is already sounding like an amazing landscape astro lens.
It's actually very cool. Now, being f2.8, it means you can use it not only for landscape, but you can also use it for portrait work as well. You're going to get a very shallow depth of field in your photos, so you can use it for portrait work. But one of the coolest things I saw about it was how close it can focus to your subject.
I witnessed this as well.
Yeah, if I was organized, I'd tell you exactly how close it can focus, but it's real close.
I'm gonna say like a centimeter or two.
Yeah, I reckon it is. I think it's like 15 mil off the end.
Tell you what, you keep talking, really close. I'll Google it and tell you.
Okay, you Google that and let me know. So the reason I bring this up is because a mutual friend of Cameron and I, Glyn Lavender. G'day, Glyn. I know you'll be watching and tuning in because you've only done 6 million podcasts already, and we've done two. So why wouldn't you tune into us?
Yeah.
Glyn popped himself over to Tasmania to Cam's place and flopped on his couch.
Crashed on the couch. Yep.
And thanks, Glyn. Had himself I guess you'd call it a prototype version of that lens. Because Glyn is a Tamron ambassador here in Australia. And he was out chasing sample photos using the new Sony 11-20 f2.8 camera. Now, that lens will only work on Sony's APS-C lineup. So their A6000 series. Which are brilliant little cameras, just by the way. Fantastic compact little units that
you might have to
take
repeat,
awesome
you might
photos
have to repeat what camera
and
that was
are
that
nice
your,
and small.
Your
and
sound,
then
your sound went a bit weird. What camera
the
was that?
The Sony
for?
A6000 series.
Right, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so anything starting with an A6, so A6400, 6600. A6000, all of those models, this lens will suit. So Glyn went over to Tassie to chase some photos, and then a week later he popped himself down to the Ballarine Peninsula in my neck of the woods. I got up at bullcrap o'clock and went and joined him for a sorry, I just lost a little bit of power there. Went and joined him for a sunrise, and of course the days leading up, the sunrises were absolutely spectacular. We had some beautiful conditions. Then Glyn decided to come and ruin all that.
That's funny. And the same thing happened. The same thing sort of happened down here. We went looking for nice light and it went the opposite way to Glyn.
He's the biggest jinx of all time for landscape photography. But he also, we popped ourselves down to Point Lonsdale, which is a place that I haven't brought up in the podcast yet, but we will talk more about Point Lonsdale. It is my muse. I love going there to take photos. And he went down there and did some awesome stuff with a model, and they got some brilliant shots. And the video, the promo video, came out a couple of days ago. So we'll link that as well.
So with the Tamron, this is, I actually get confused because I'm a bit silly like that. The APS-C is not full frame, is it?
Correct. So APS-C is pretty much 1.6 times smaller in Sony. Right. It's 1.6 times smaller than 35 mil. So a full frame sensor is the same size as a 35 millimeter piece of film, whereas the APS-C size sensor, which is probably the most common sensor in a digital SLR over the last 15 years. So when the first DSLRs came out around the turn of the century, don't you love saying that? around the turn of the century, folks, when the DSLRs came out. So we're talking your Nikon D100, we're talking your Nikon D70.
Yeah.
When those bad boys came out, they rocked the APS-C sensor.
Which is based on the old APS film, isn't it? Size.
Correct. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny you say old APS film because there
Is that still available?
Well, APS film came out in the late 90s and then was completely killed off by digital.
Yeah, right.
So it was funny that they hitched their wagon to the APS-C setup when now full frame is starting to really dominate. And I can see a time in the pretty near future where APS-C size sensors may even be phased out completely, particularly now that they can make these cameras so small and include full frame sensors in them. But who knows? It could go either way. There's still, there'll probably be a place for them, I'd say, for the next 5 years. But beyond that, I'm not so sure, given that now there's so many more full frame models. And of course, with more full frame models, the price goes down and down.
So with the 11 to 20, that would not be traditionally 11 mil to 20.
That is correct. So It's 1.6 times. So it works out the equivalent focal length is around a 15 to 16 millimeter wide angle, which is great. And a 16 mil wide angle is what I would use a lot.
Yeah. And I saw Glenn, as you mentioned, using this camera, and there was no distortion at that wide end, which I thought was pretty impressive as well. So I just Googled as well. It's got a 15 centimeter macro. So it's pretty good.
Now, 15 centimeters would be from the focal plane. So off the end of the lens, it's probably only about 1.5 centimeters, as you say. So
Glenn was trying to catch a bumblebees down here. If you ever want to watch something amusing, watch Glenn's a bit older than us. We won't call him a grandfather, but
I'm pretty sure it starts with a five.
It starts with a five. You remember, go watch Glenn chase bumblebees around lavender farms up in the middle of Tasmania. It's good. You'll certainly see someone have a lot of fun. I did.
Glenn Lavender in the lavender. I love it. So we are getting close to time. So we're over, but we knew this would happen during this podcast because we like to talk a lot.
Yeah.
I just wanted to quickly run over, do a little, we like to keep it to the end. We don't want to bang on too much about our own businesses, but Cameron, you've got an Olympus Day coming up.
Yeah, quickly. I've got an Olympus Day coming up on the 25th of July, 2021, which is actually supported by Olympus Australia. So thank you to the guy and the teams up there. So I've got pretty much a nice big fat bag of Olympus Pro lenses and bodies that anyone can come along and try for free. You got to pay to come along, but you can try the gear for free. So what we're doing how's that work? Yeah. So we're doing a Olympus Day out of Hobart. So we leave from Hobart, we're heading up to Mount Field National Park, which has some incredible waterfalls, heaps of fungi. So this is mostly open to people in Tassie, unless someone from the mainland's down here on that weekend. And then we'll head out a bit further to the southwest. So it's pretty much a day to put the gear in your hand. There's no pressure to buy anything. It's not a sales pitch. It is really just go out and enjoy Tassie's outdoors and use a bit of different gear, and if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't.
Fantastic. I've used Olympus gear a lot, and I do like their gear. I think it's fantastic equipment. I've used a lot of everything, but Olympus in particular, particularly for traveling, it's again that small compact setup. So cool. Nice stuff. And you also wanted to quickly mention your Tarkine Wilderness workshop as well.
Speaking Tarkine Wilderness behind us, so I do a 4-day workshop up there. And this is mostly, I get mostly mainlanders coming on this one, which is awesome because a lot of people haven't heard of the Tarkine. So that's running from August 27th to 31st. People usually fly into Launceston, pick them up in a nice bus, scoot out to the northwest coast, spend 4 days hanging around a nice resort, and heading out to the coastline into the forest. So if you want to experience what's behind us and some of, if not the greatest forests in the Southern Hemisphere, the Tarkine's one to jump on. So we'll put all the links and stuff behind down below. If you come along, and yeah, and what have you got going in the shop? You got,
well,
you're giving, you know, away three only, cameras.
You know, sure. Sure. I'm giving away a bag full of Olympus Pro lens. No. that you're going to drop off on your way to Flinders Ranges.
I don't know.
Yeah. No. We've got a little promotion going for anyone who wants to order their prints through cameraandphoto.com.au. We've got free shipping Australia-wide, which excludes canvas prints. Sorry, can't do free shipping on canvas. They're too big and bulky and expensive to send. Free shipping on all prints for anyone who listens to the show. So if you just leave a comment in the user section that you, in the comment section that you have heard a shout out on the podcast that you get free shipping, well, I'll take the shipping off your printing. And we print everything from a 6x4 photo to a 60x40 inch canvas print, or even bigger if you want to as well. Yep. So get in touch if you've got any needs.
Is there an end date on that deal? Because people might be listening to this like 10 years from now, and you're like an old man still in the shop.
No. Right. There's no end date. If you put on there in the comments section that you heard this,
yep,
and I'm 78 years old, which I probably will be when I'm running this thing. let's say to the end of the year. That's fine.
Yeah, right. End of 2020.
The end of 2021 is what we're in here, folks.
We don't fantastic. Muck around. We don't muck around on this show. We go.
We don't.
No.
And to that end, time to wrap things up. Thank you so much for listening and joining us on the Down South Photo Show podcast. It's been great to chat with you again, Cam. Hope you enjoyed yourself.
Yes, thanks, mate.
Very quick preview of next week. Now, Cam's going to be on the road, as we already know, so I'm already excited to work out how that's all going to work, but
it'll probably be a pub where I check in from.
Perfect. So it's either your tent, your four-wheel drive, or with a palmer and a pot in front of you.
Hey, that could work. Yeah.
Palmer.
Not a palmy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next week we're also going to talk about what gear you need to take good landscape photos. That'll be general, but we're going to talk a bit more about gear. And do you really need to spend thousands of dollars on top on models and I'm also going to finally, thank you, making a comeback as the coronavirus restrictions start to lift. So, Cam, anything else to add?
No, that's all good, mate. Thank you, everyone, for all the support from last week, and the feedback was great. We'll put up all the notes in the segment there, and we'll put up what's coming up next week. And I'll probably check in from somebody else's state somewhere. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Nice, fantastic. So don't forget to subscribe if you're on YouTube, guys. Just a little subscription down there. Subscribing is free. Do that, hit the notifications button, give us a thumbs up, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you, Cam. See you next week.
See you guys. Cheers.